the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Let's make a deal. Good Monday afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. President Biden and House Speaker Kevin McCarthy will have what they call a meeting of the minds today at the White House. Mr. Biden claims the ball is very much in the GOP court when it comes to striking a deal on the debt ceiling.
I've done my part. Now it's time for the other side to move.
Republicans say they have moved and are demanding more spending cuts as part of any deal to raise the debt ceiling. Florida Congressman Byron Donalds.
All Joe Biden's trying to do is find every possible nickel out of every couch from every American to pay for his radical spending.
Progressive Democrats want the president to invoke the 14th Amendment to force his way on the debt ceiling. If there is no deal by the 1st of June, the U.S. risks defaulting on its debt for the very first time. Presidential politics, the other big story today. A couple of prominent Republicans throwing their proverbial hats into the ring for 2024. South Carolina Senator Tim Scott making it official today. He rolls out his campaign in Charleston.
My goal is to restore hope, create opportunities, and protect the America we love. I've been blessed, gifted really, with the greatest citizenship on earth. I want to protect it for the next generation.
And later this week, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis will jump into the race with an announcement in Miami.
When he stepped into Jethro's Barbecue in Des Moines a week ago, it was a new race because people realized the D.C. media have been telling us that this guy is boring. He's quite the opposite. He's the governor who is implementing the Trump agenda without the baggage.
Kevin Roberts with the Heritage Foundation. The first Republican presidential debate happens in August in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. The NAACP has just issued a travel advisory for blacks to Florida. It claims the Sunshine State is, quote, openly hostile toward African Americans because of the policies of Governor DeSantis.
Fortunately, the NAACP is not the State Department, so their travel advisories mean nothing.
Radio talk show host David Webb is a black man living in Florida.
I see more out-of-state license plates. They're either moving there or going there. They're coming from Canada. Miami's full of Canadians. So people are there. They're going to Florida.
Governor DeSantis has come under fire from far-left groups for attempts to ban indoctrination from Florida public schools. After a year of fighting, Russian forces have captured the Ukrainian city of Bakhmut, a city of 80,000 people. At least that's what Russia is saying. Ukrainian officials are saying something else. Correspondent Molly Hunter says, whatever the truth is, there's not much left to that city.
Both sides paid dearly. The exact number of military casualties, unknown, estimates well into the tens of thousands. Satellite images show a vast, uninhabitable wasteland.
They destroyed everything. There are no buildings. There is nothing.
There is nothing, says Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky. He was able to secure a $375 million U.S. aid package over the weekend that includes F-16 fighter jets and pilots to help train Ukrainian forces. It is arraignment day for the man accused of stabbing to death four University of Idaho students last year. The small-town murders shocked the nation, and the 28-year-old suspect, Brian Koberger, maintains he is innocent. Legal analyst Lori Levinson.
The defense will say, why would he do this? What was the motive? There's no knife that was found.
A knife sheath was found at the crime scene containing Koberger's DNA, according to local authorities. 24-year-old Daniel Penny, the retired Marine charged in a chokehold death on the New York City subway system, has now broken his silence. Here's reporter Nate Foy.
Penny making his first public remarks about the death of Jordan Neely to the New York Post. Penny saying, quote, I'm deeply saddened by the loss of life. It's tragic what happened to him. Hopefully we can change the system that so desperately failed us.
Penny's attorney, Steve Razor.
We do have the police, right? But the reality is they can't be everywhere. And when somebody says, you know what, I'm going to help, we want that to be encouraged, not discouraged.
The grand jury in the Daniel Penny case could hear hear evidence soon. The ex-Marine is facing up to 15 years in prison if convicted of manslaughter for that May 1st incident. A SpaceX rocket with three paying passengers docked today with the International Space Station after Sunday's successful blastoff from Cape Canaveral. Peter King is on the Space Coast.
Nominal orbit insertion.
Copy. Nominal insertion.
It's the fourth time in orbit for Axiom 2 Commander Peggy Whitson after a perfect SpaceX Falcon 9 launch to start the second private astronaut mission to the International Space Station. This is the first flight for her three crewmates, SpaceX Chief Engineer Bill Gerstenmaier.
Make sure you share the joy of zero-G with your crew.
We will do that.
Axiom 2 is due to spend 8 days at the space station.
Peter King in Orlando. The private mission is one for the record books. It includes Saudi Arabia's first ever woman in space. Brooks Koepka, king of the golf world, the 33-year-old, won his fifth major title on Sunday in Rochester, New York.
Koepka conquers the PGA at Oak Hill.
Jim Nance with the call on CBS. Koepka shot 9 under par for the tournament to win by a couple of strokes.
I'm just so happy right now. I'm kind of at a loss for words, but this is just the coolest thing.
Koepka's win is the first major title for a player in the Saudi-funded LIV Golf League. We'll have more on the tourney with Randy in sports. Also ahead, Christian activists gather in Albany, and a local congressman says farmers are needed in Pennsylvania. His concerns after this.
Good afternoon. I'm Kevin Williams. The week is off to a nice start. I'll have the latest forecast coming up for you in about 10 minutes.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much. Let's check the stories making news where you live next, all across New York and Pennsylvania. The largest gathering of the year for Christian activists happens tomorrow in Albany, New York. Legislative Day, as it's known, returns to the state capitol for the first time in 3 years. COVID has shut it down since 2020. An estimated 1,500 New Yorkers will be at the Empire State Plaza Convention Center to rally for pro-life and pro-family causes.
So it's pretty important that we gather people from all across the state of New York in our state capitol in the final weeks of the legislative session, that we are present to remind legislators that we are paying attention and they ought not to do the things they're doing.
Legislative Day Coordinator Jason McGuire, you can register to attend the event at albanyupdate.com. Bipartisan legislation is in the works in the Pennsylvania State Senate. It would legalize marijuana across the Commonwealth. Republican Dan Laughlin and Democrat Sharif Street want to create a commercial marijuana market for adults 21 and older. This bill would also allow medical cannabis patients to grow their own marijuana plants. Critics contend the commercialization of marijuana in the Commonwealth will only increase crime and lead to more drugged driving. Memorial Day weekend is fast approaching, and that means the summer travel season is about to kick into high gear. Patrick DeHaan with GasBuddy.com says the price at the pump is significantly lower than last year. He says last Memorial Day, the nation was just starting to emerge from the shadow of COVID.
Travel was exploding last year. This year, a more cautious tone on the economy and likely with it less gasoline demand.
More than 42 million of us, U.S., will travel at least 50 miles from home this coming weekend. Regular unleaded will be about $1 less a gallon than last Memorial Day. Houghton University in Western New York is defending its decision to fire two residence hall directors for violating a school policy by attaching personal pronouns to their emails. 27-year-old Reagan Zalea and 29-year-old Shua Wilmot refused to eliminate the phrases he, him, and she, her from their Houghton email accounts, and that's what got them the old heave-ho. Houghton President Dr. Wayne Lewis says the school is unapologetic in upholding an orthodox Christian worldview rooted in Wesleyan theological tradition. Houghton is a Wesleyan college. While a number of New York counties have declared states of emergency over the migrant crisis. Erie County has not. In fact, County Executive Mark Poloncarz thinks such a declaration would be illegal and would be morally repugnant, he says. Democratic State Senator Sean Ryan agrees.
Governor Abbott sent over 70,000 people to New York State. We don't control where the bus ticket goes.
Erie County Republican Jim Malcheski argues Western New York is not equipped to accommodate an influx of illegal immigrants.
Kathy Hochul has welcomed everybody with open arms, and here they are on our doorstep. This has happened so far with no plan, and with no plan, it's going to continue to wreak havoc.
A group of migrants could arrive this week in the suburbs of Syracuse. The town of Salina is trying to get a restraining order to prevent those asylum seekers from being housed at a hotel there. Pennsylvania State Senator Doug Mastriano plans to make a big announcement this week about his decision on whether he'll run for U.S. Senate. The conservative teased it as, quote, crazy good news, his words. Mastriano lost his 2022 gubernatorial bid to Democrat Josh Shapiro by 15 points. The state senator is currently seeking the seat held by U.S. Senator Bob Casey Jr. Pennsylvania Congressman Glenn Thompson is worried about the depleting number of farmers in his state.
The age of the average farmer in the United States is 57 and a half years old. So it raises the question, who is going to be there to take over the farm and to work on the farm?
You don't have farmers, you don't have food, says Congressman Thompson. He's sponsoring a bill in Washington that would incentivize farming by offering to pay back the college loans of those who get involved in the agriculture industry.
Essentially, they'd have to work in agriculture for at least 10 years. At the end of 10 years, they would be able to have their loans forgiven.
By the end of this decade, 47 of Pennsylvania's 67 counties will have more senior citizens than they will have people under the age of 20. Chemung County, New York Executive Chris Moss will be signing legislation today that imposes term limits on himself and all county legislators. Moss says term limits promote fresh ideas by newly elected officials and encourages qualified candidates to run for office. An education seminar was held over the weekend in the Scranton-Wilkes-Barre area to help Pennsylvania teachers better teach the Holocaust.
Nothing requires a teacher to be more on their game than teaching about the Holocaust. I think you've really got to have it together.
Retired teacher Dr. Mark Gudgel helps educators handle the Holocaust in school. He recommends teachers visit the National Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C.
Going there, going to a place is such a meaningful thing and provides you with something you can't get anywhere else.
A recent survey shows 63% of Millennials and Gen Zers today, 63%, do not know that 6 million Jews were murdered by Nazi Germany in World War II. Pennsylvania Senator John Fetterman wore a sweatshirt and gym shorts to a recent Capitol Hill news conference, and critics are slamming that as totally inappropriate. Colorado Congresswoman Lauren Boebert called Fetterman's attire unbecoming. The senator recently returned to Congress from a two-month bout with clinical depression related to a stroke he had suffered last year. You're tuned into the Noon Report, a Monday edition, right here on Family Life.
Good afternoon. I'm Randy Snavely. Bob, we begin in the NBA and the Miami Heat, the number 8 seed. They are just one win away from going to the NBA championship. They blew out Boston 128-102 yesterday. Miami rode the 29 points from Gabe Vincent to the win and a 3-0 series lead against the once favored Celtics. On the ice, the Vegas Golden Knights seized a 2-0 lead over Dallas with an overtime victory. Chandler Stephenson scored just 70 seconds into the OT to drop the Stars 3-2. To baseball, in New York, the Mets took a pair from Cleveland 5-4 and 2-1. Justin Verlander outstanding 8 innings to pick up the Game 2 victory. Frankie Lindor hit his 7th home run on the season. The Yankees completed a three-game sweep of Cincinnati, 4-1. Bader and Torres both went deep. The Braves, Nationals, Brewers, Rangers, and Padres, your other interleague winners. In the National League, Bryson Stott hit a pinch hit two-run home run in the seventh inning, and the Phillies downed the Cubs 2-1. Pirates fell to Arizona 8-3. St. Louis doubled up the Dodgers 10-5, and the Giants beat the Marlins 7-5. American League winners, Baltimore 8-3 over Toronto, the White Sox 5-2 over Kansas City, Houston shut out Oakland 2-0, and the Angels beat the Twins 4-2. Brooks Koepka is your PGA champion. He won at Oak Hill with a 9-under score. That was two better than Victor Hovland and Scottie Scheffler. And in NASCAR, Kyle Larson took home the $1 million prize in the All-Star race. Bubba Wallace, Tyler Reddick, Chase Briscoe, and Chase Elliott rounded out the top five. That is a look at sports.
All right, Randy, man, good to have you back in the saddle. And still to come on the Noon Report for a Monday, two more for 2024. Water safety, do's and don'ts, and the Kyle Convention in Kyle, Texas.
Welcome to Breakpoint, a daily look at an ever-changing culture through the lens of unchanging truth. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. On this day in the year AD 337, the Emperor Constantine died. Now, many Christians think that Constantine was perhaps the worst thing to ever happen to the church. By making Christianity the imperial religion, the argument goes, Constantine led the church to compromise with pagan culture, he married it to state power, and he derailed the spread of the gospel. The church, many think, was better off as a persecuted minority. After all, didn't Church Father Tertullian tell us that the blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church? Well, unfortunately, this argument is wrong on almost every count. Even Tertullian himself did not wish for persecution to continue. His words about the blood of the martyrs were, in fact, a way to argue the futility of persecution, not to endorse martyrdom as necessary for church growth. In fact, Tertullian is the first person in history to use the phrase freedom of religion that we know of, and to argue for it based on the Christian doctrine of the image of God. Worship, Tertullian argued, must be voluntary to be acceptable. Coercion in religion must end and be replaced by religious liberty. There's also great misunderstanding about what Constantine in fact did. A long exposure to Christianity led the emperor to look on it favorably, even when he was a pagan. For example, he appointed Lactantius, a Berber Christian convert, as his son's tutor in 309. Lactantius wrote the Divine Institutes, and like other early Christian writers, argued for religious liberty on the grounds that worship of God was only acceptable if it was offered freely. In 312, when fighting a rival for the title of emperor, Constantine is reported to have seen a vision of a cross with the words, "In this sign conquer." He had his soldiers paint a cross on their shields and then won the Battle of Milvian Bridge. As a result, he converted to Christianity, though there's dispute about whether his conversion was genuine. The following year, he issued the Edict of Milan, using wording and reasoning taken directly from Lactantius' Divine Institutes. The edict established religious liberty in Rome, effectively making Christianity legal and ending religious persecution. Now, this is where arguments against Constantine often go wrong. The claim that Constantine made Christianity the official religion of the empire, thereby undermining the distinction between church and state and setting the stage for the entanglement between them, is a fundamental misunderstanding of Constantine and of the Edict of Milan. Far from making Christianity the state religion, the Edict of Milan legalized all religions, not just Christianity. It is also claimed, including by a popular novel a few years back by Dan Brown about secret societies, that Constantine determined the canon of Scripture and other key Christian doctrines when he oversaw the Council of Nicaea. Both of those charges are nonsense. The canon of Scripture had been under discussion since the 2nd century. The 27 books of the New Testament were first listed as canon by Athanasius, a man with a history of defying Roman emperors. And the reasons for their inclusion are well documented. Finally, before Constantine, the church had grown and expanded without government recognition for nearly three centuries. In fact, Christianity is the only major world religion to ever begin or to spread without government support. Constantine's actions did not change the precedent already set that church and state are separate institutions and that the church can exist and function in the face of state opposition. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
Thank you very much, John. Let's take it outside. Next, meteorologist Kevin Williams.
Here is your family life weather forecast. The work week has picked up where the weekend left off with some nice weather. Temperatures peaking in the mid-60s to the mid-70s. Then for tonight, mainly clear, low temps, 40s and low 50s. A good deal of sunshine tomorrow, high temps, 70s. And on Wednesday, variably cloudy with some showers arriving, breezy, and returning cooler for some. Highs will be in the 60s and 70s, but afternoon temperatures will fall into the 50s across New York State and Northwest Pennsylvania. All right, Kevin Williams, thank you very much. This is the Noon Report on Family Life. I'm your host, Bob Price. Great to have you with us today. Lots going on this Monday, the 22nd of May. President Biden threatening to invoke the 14th Amendment in order to force his way on debt ceiling talks. Those talks are getting underway in earnest again today at the White House. The president thinks conservatives are intentionally sabotaging the talks to hurt him politically.
There are some MAGA Republicans in the House who know the damage that it would do to the economy. And because I am president, Biden would take the blame. And that's the one way to make sure Biden's not reelected.
Texas Senator Ted Cruz says that's nonsense.
His view is that he's willing to tank the economy because he's unwilling to give even a penny in the trillions in new spending that caused the inflation that's hurting Americans all across the country.
Maryland Democrat Chris Van Hollen says Republicans are playing chicken with the economy, and that's not right either.
What we have right now is Speaker McCarthy and MAGA House Republicans saying that they're going to push the default detonator and blow up our economy.
Texas Republican Jody Arrington says the fiscal catastrophe is solely the fault of the commander-in-chief and no one else.
The president's had almost 100 days without engaging the process now. His back is against the wall. I hope he changes his tune, and I hope in his conversation with Speaker McCarthy that it's more productive and more focused.
As we mentioned, the talks are underway again today at the White House between Mr. Biden and Speaker Kevin McCarthy, and the clock is ticking. They have until the 1st of June to avoid a default on the nation's debt. A couple prominent Republicans will throw their proverbial hats into the presidential ring this week. South Carolina Senator Tim Scott rolling out his campaign today in Charleston, and later on, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis will announce he's a candidate for president in Miami. The first Republican presidential debate is in August in Milwaukee. Legislative Day 2023 is tomorrow in Albany. It's the largest gathering of Christian activists in the state. And Family Life's Greg Gillespie has a preview.
The goal of Legislative Day is to put conservative New Yorkers face to face with Christians from every corner of the Empire State and to get them FaceTime with lawmakers. Some 1,500 people are expected at The Egg, the Empire Plaza Convention Center, starting at 9 o'clock. The program will feature a presentation by Joe Kennedy, an assistant football coach at a Seattle area school, who in 2008 started praying at the 50-yard line after games. The school fired him on First Amendment grounds. Kennedy's case went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. Also on the docket, Mike and Julia Peace of Rochester, who better the lives of those living in the city with a special focus on youth and young adults. Greg Gillespie, Family Life News.
All right, thank you, Greg. And Greg will be at Legislative Day tomorrow filing reports for Family Life News. A 24-year-old Marine veteran is breaking his silence after being charged in the chokehold death of a homeless man on a New York City subway.
In an interview with the New York Post, Daniel Penny said he is not a white supremacist and, faced with the same circumstance, would do what he did again.
Penny held 30-year-old Jordan Neely in a chokehold for 15 minutes back on the 1st of May. Penny's attorney, Steve Razor.
He was fearful for the safety of those passengers. So when he acted, his mindset was to keep his fellow passengers safe from attack.
The retired Marine faces 15 years in prison if convicted of manslaughter. Overseas in Ukraine, President Volodymyr Zelensky has secured another $375 million in military aid from the U.S.
President Zelensky has lobbied long and hard for advanced fighter jets. Now, after a sudden about-turn in U.S. policy, Washington has agreed to let Western allies supply Kyiv with American-made F-16 jets and will support a joint effort to train Ukrainian fighter pilots on them. Zelensky used his visit to Hiroshima to draw comparisons to the devastated city of Bakhmut. Zelensky was quick to deny Kremlin claims that Bakhmut had been taken by its forces, but peering through the dense fog of war makes it hard to determine if the fighting in one of the longest and bloodiest battles in this conflict really has come to an end.
Deborah Pata reporting from the front lines of the war in Ukraine. It's a modern-day case of David versus Goliath out of Michigan. Family Life's Brian Querry tells us how a young teenage boy was able to save his sister from a would-be kidnapping.
The boy's 8-year-old sister was in the backyard when, according to Michigan State Police, a 17-year-old came out of the woods and attempted to abduct her. Her older brother saw what was happening and started shooting at the suspect with his slingshot, hitting him in the head and chest. The suspect ran away and was later found hiding with injuries that appeared to have been caused by the slingshot. The young man is being hailed as a hero for saving his sister and taking down Goliath. Brian Querry, Family Life News.
All right, Brian, thank you for that. Next at noon, the warmer weather means folks will soon be getting in and on the water. And with that in mind, we decided to take a deep dive into the do's and don'ts when it comes to water safety. I spoke recently with Tim Marshall, Director of Emergency Services in Steuben County, New York. It won't be much longer before we start getting those swimming pools going. I know the boating season is already well underway, but water safety is a topic that sadly we don't talk about until we experience tragedy. I know you witnessed that last week in Hammondsport, a 19-year-old drowning in Cuca Lake. So we thought it'd be a good idea to go to the expert and talk a little bit about water safety, you know, as spring starts to give way to summer. What are some of the important tips to keep in mind? We'll start with the swimming pools, Tim. There's so many tragic drownings that happen right in our backyards. What are some of the important things to keep in mind when it comes to swimming pools?
Well, the most important thing is to keep your eyes on the little ones. Make sure that you've got your eyes on your kids and keep them back away from the pool. Make sure that your swimming pool has a fence around it and that there is also an alarm that triggers when somebody makes entry to the pool unexpectedly. So those are a couple things that really can help you around the swimming pool.
Yeah, and I believe the fence is a state law in New York now, correct?
Yeah, absolutely, yes. You must have a fence around your swimming pool in New York State. That's a code violation if you do not.
Yeah, and it doesn't take a lot of water just because it's a 2-foot pool or whatever. It could be one of those wading pools. It doesn't take a lot of water for a child to drown, correct?
That's correct. Once that water gets into the lungs, it's pretty much over from there.
So let's talk about boating safety next. I know a lot of folks look forward to this time of year when they get their boats out on the water. So many beautiful lakes across this listening area. When it comes to boating safety, remind us again some rules for, I want to say rules for the road, but rules for the water.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the first thing is water and alcohol do not mix. You need to make sure that you've got a clear head when you're out on the water. If you've got somebody who's not a strong swimmer, make sure that they've got a life jacket on. You know, a personal flotation device does a lot, especially right now with the water temperatures where they are. You know, we might get a beautiful 75, 80 degree day, but the water temperatures in most of the Finger Lakes right now are still in the low 50s, even the upper 40s. And once you break that surface of the water, it gets even colder below that. So good swimming weather doesn't come around here until mid to late June, July and August.
Yeah, good stuff. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but personal flotation devices, are they required on personal watercraft in New York?
Yes, they are required to have life jackets for each person that's riding on the boat. When you're on the water, you must have the ability to be able to gain access to those flotation devices.
All right. One of my favorite pastimes is to fish. People that like to fish and be on creeks and streams and kayaking and those sorts of things, that's something else we need to keep in mind as well, is when we're, you know, fishing or kayaking or canoeing. I know we even had tragedy this year with a fatal canoeing incident or a kayaking incident in the Chemung River. Tim, some things to keep in mind when we're on creeks and streams.
Certainly. I mean, kayaking has become pretty big, specifically on the river. And the Friends of the River, it's an organization based out of Chemung County, has a lot of great resources on their website. And you have to be very, very aware of your conditions on the river. If you can't clearly see if the water is murky and muddy, it's not the best time to go kayaking on the river. Yes, you might get better flows, but you can't see those dangers and those hazards under the water. There are downed trees and brush that are in the water that we call snags, and they can suck you in and draw you right under. And you have to make sure that you're very, very aware of where you're boating and kayaking on the river and making sure you're doing that safe. And again, if you're on the river in a kayak, a personal flotation device is mandatory. I highly recommend that nobody kayaks on the river without a PFD, a personal flotation device. That's really, really a key point, because that may be the only thing that's going to keep you up above water.
Good advice there from Tim Marshall, Director of Emergency Services, Forest Bend County, New York. And you're listening to the Noon Report on Family Life.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. The work week has picked up where the weekend left off with some nice weather. A little hazy from some of that high altitude smoke from the fires in Western Canada, but all in all, it's a nice pattern. In fact, most of the week shapes up well. The only real rain chance comes Wednesday night with the cold front. That'll drop our temperatures again, but set us up for some nice weather heading toward the Memorial Day weekend. There's our call for this afternoon. Sunshine will be hazy at times. It'll be a nice day through the afternoon hours. Temperatures peaking generally in the mid-60s to the mid-70s. Then for tonight, mainly clear, low temps, 40s and low 50s. A good deal of sunshine tomorrow. Slight chance of an afternoon isolated thundershower across the eastern Finger Lakes and the eastern Twin Tiers. High temps, 70s. And on Wednesday, variably cloudy with some showers arriving. Breezy. It'll be turning cooler for some. Highs will be in the 60s and 70s, but afternoon temperatures will have fallen into the 50s across New York State and northwest Pennsylvania.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much. Finally, at noon today, the town of Kyle, Texas, has failed in its attempts to set the Guinness World Record for the largest gathering of people with the same name. The gathering of Kyles happened yesterday at Lake Kyle Park, about a half hour south of the state capital in Austin. While more than 1,800 Kyles showed up, it wasn't enough. The record, by the way, in case you're wondering, that's held by a gathering of more than 2,300 Ivans in Eastern Europe. Ivan, very popular name there. That happened in 2017, so a little way to go for the Kyles. Maybe next year, who knows? And that's the world we live in, Monday, the 22nd of May. I'm Bob Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.